The Senate.
1:20. Mr. President, what time, or Mr. Vice President, what time were we supposed to start?
Mr. President, I think that clock is a little fast.
There he is.
Hey!
Mr. President, hey, I'm turned on. Here we go. Mr. President, I move that we re-resolve ourselves back in committee of the whole for a little while to examine bills on general file.
Before we do and take that vote, we have messages from the House or standing committee reports. Have we already made the motion? Okay. All right, you heard the motion. All in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, no. Senator Meyer.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. President.
The committee of the whole will come back in order. The first file for our consideration is Senate File 17. Reading clerk, please read the bill. File.
Senate File 17, Municipal Jurisdiction, an act relating to two municipalities, sponsored by the Corporations Committee. It was referred to Committee Number 7, which returned a recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Agar, Case, and Scott. Noes, Senators Nethercott and Pappas. Senator Case, Chairman.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate File 17, Municipal Jurisdiction. Mr. Chairman, there is a standing committee amendment. I'd ask that it be read in at this time.
Senate File 17, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 7.
Mr. Chairman, I would move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 17, and I'll discuss the amendment with the bill. Ladies and gentlemen of the Senate, this bill deals with the ability of a municipality to regulate activities outside of its municipal boundaries. There are places in statute where that regulation is permitted. The key part of this bill is that it basically says that the regulation would only be permitted if the county agrees. So the key part of the bill, which is new language, 1613.101, I'm on page 2, extraterritorial jurisdiction authorization. No governing body or executive head of a municipality is authorized to exercise jurisdiction over an area beyond the corporate boundaries of a municipality unless, and I'll point to the standing committee amendment, the first part says all of the following apply. And you see we've got three Romanettes there, Mr. Chairman. The first one is that the exercise of extraterritorial jurisdiction is specifically authorized by statute. Secondly, that the municipality enacts an ordinance specifying the following conditions. It has to specify the statutory authority and the exercise of jurisdiction which will be asserted, and C, the area beyond the corporate boundaries in the municipality which will be brought within its jurisdiction. And then another element is Romanet 3 on the top of page 3, which says the Board of County Commissioners of a county in which extraterritorial jurisdiction will be asserted adopts a resolution authorizing the exercise of jurisdiction under this ordinance enacted pursuant to paragraph 2 of this section. Upon the effective date of the resolution, the ordinance shall be effective as to the unincorporated areas of the county specified in the resolution. This is kind of the crux of the bill. It says that a county can't or a city may not extend jurisdiction unless all of these elements are met, including that the county agrees. So the basis for the bill, Mr. Chairman, is that folks who live in the county, who vote for county commissioners, don't live in the city and don't have a vote for things that happen in the city, but they're affected by the policies of the city.
So Senator Case, should we call for the question on the amendment now so we can be back on the bill?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I told you only part of the amendment.
Okay.
If you'd like, I can do the second part, or I was going to grab it as we move along. I'm at your pleasure, sir.
Okay, Mr. Chairman Case, continue.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, thank you. On page 3, B and C also talk about some conditions that the ordinance will be in effect until it's nullified. It can be nullified by the Board of County Commissioners. I guess the county can change its mind. 16, on and after January 1st, 2019, any exercise of extraterritorial jurisdiction by a municipality shall be unlawful unless an ordinance is enacted and authorized in accordance with this section. And then we go, Mr. Chairman, to the specific parts of statute that are amended. The first one on page 4, and I want to point out that this applies only to cities of first-class cities of greater than 4,000 population. And this is the half-mile area jurisdiction outside of a city, Mr. Chairman. Basically, the mayor has jurisdiction as may be vested in him by ordinance, except as otherwise provided by this paragraph, in all matters excepting taxation 1/2 mile outside of the corporate limits. And then you see we deleted all the rest of that language, and the new language at the bottom of the page says this paragraph shall not apply to any incorporated area for which a county has officially adopted a comprehensive plan pursuant to WS 185202B. So in other words, the city cannot exercise jurisdiction over the half mile if the county has adopted a comprehensive plan. Now, that plan, Mr. Chairman, there's kind of two types of planning. Counties have plans, but they're not comprehensive plans that include zoning. This is a comprehensive plan that includes zoning, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, on page 5, this section talks about an area of our statute where cities have jurisdiction up to 5 miles out with respect to our urban renewal statute, Mr. Chairman. And the urban renewal statute deals with blighted areas. So I don't think it's ever been used in Wyoming, but cities have the ability to reach out as far as 5 miles to deal with urban blight. Clearly, it's a piece of legislation from another time, if you want my opinion, Mr. Chairman. But this also says that the county has to consent to that exercise of that jurisdiction. And you can see as we go through, Mr. Chairman, it continues. On the next section, the bottom of the page on page 5, it just deals with plats and who has to approve plats, whether plats are jointly approved, just approved by one entity or the other. And you can see the new language is really contained in the middle of the page where there's a strikeout, and then we see that we're talking about that a city, any incorporated city or town can approve plats within 1 mile of the boundaries of any, and you can see that it's such city. We don't let suches in our committee, Mr. Chairman. We deal with suches. We let the tall senator from Natrona County stamp out these here suches, Mr. Chairman. So that is what we did. We stamped that one out, and that's the rest of our amendment. But you can see that the new language in the bill is that is key that the city can approve the plat if it's not regulated by zoning consistent with a comprehensive plan according to the same statute we talked about before. That's basically the bill, Mr. Chairman. It's got a Section 3. It's effective immediately. That's the bill. Perhaps we should do the Standing Committee Amendment now?
Yes, we're on the amendment now. Any discussion on the amendment? Hearing no discussion, the question is on Senator Case's motion that Standing Committee Amendment 1 to 17 do pass. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to 17 has passed. We are back on the bill. Discussion. We'll start with Mr. President and then go to Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question, and I want to be sure I understand this correctly. my colleague, the chairman of the Senate Corporations Committee, on page 4, starting with line 17, that language there, and you said what a comprehensive plan is. So the question I have, where we says this paragraph shall not apply to any unincorporated area with a comprehensive plan. So if you have a county that has a plan but it's not zoned, then what I'm understanding is this would not apply. And so then what does apply, and how is that half mile treated?
Senator Case.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think what happens is it goes back to page 2, and they could exert jurisdiction over the half mile as long as the county approves it. So that page 2, where extraterritorial jurisdiction, lines 4 through 7, is the key. No governing body or executive head of a municipality is authorized to exercise jurisdiction over an area beyond the corporate boundaries of a municipality unless all the following apply. And so they are authorized to exert jurisdiction, but unless the county also approves it, that jurisdiction wouldn't be approved. So the county's got to adopt a resolution saying it's okay.
Mr. Vice President, and then Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Quick question on why it needs to be immediately. The effective date on this is immediately, and I know that our city is talking about some things that this would have definitely changed their mind on.
I'll just take them.
Senator, first, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and for those who could help us through this. I mean, this is one of those, some of us feel a little bit caught between a rock and a hard place as our local government entities come and visit with us about these things. And so, and I understand, you know, there's some counties that have comprehensive plans that include zoning and some that don't. And some in particularly the center part of the state not in my county, but one to the east of me that I think have, it's a point of pride to not have that comprehensive plan, and I think that it would be problematic for anybody there. But the problem I have, or this is the issue when it comes down to me and what I'm hearing, and I'm wondering how we resolve this issue, because it's not about the zoning, it's about the infrastructure that happens when the city goes to an annex. And so the city has its roads and its gutters and its infrastructure for sewer and water and all of those things. And so now comes the opportunity for annex, and so people want them to annex, and they come in, and now the roads in these adjacent areas, which are presumably you're supposed to be within, you're supposed to have at least some connection or some adjacency to the city when you annex. So now the city ends up, and they have to look at this, and now they're going to overtake, and they have to assume now liability and maintenance of these sewers and roads and these infrastructure that happens in the amendment. At the same time, so there's that. The other side of it is, you know what? There's somebody who may have lived there for 20 years. They weren't even close to the county for a half mile. You know, they were 3 or 4 miles, 5 miles away from the city, you know, 20 years ago. But as the city grew, now they're in the, and so all of a sudden these things start to apply to them. And so if you have any suggestions about how we resolve this or what this does and how this is affected, I'd like to hear it, because this is one of those bills where you just can't please everybody, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Kinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
I'd like to build a little bit upon the comments by my colleague from the Windy City. I just want to make sure that I'm understanding this bill, because there's a tension in the current law, a dynamic that it's a good tension. And that is that half mile, the city can control it. The county can't put in subdivisions with no or little infrastructure, and then eventually the city ends up having to take those over as the city grows out. So what you would hope for is that everybody's reasonable and they come to the table and they work things out. In the case of my hometown, when I became mayor, they had gone 27 years without a comprehensive plan. But I still think what brought everybody to the table was the fact that we had that half mile. The city wasn't administering it well. There are a lot of petty things back and forth, but we got everybody at the same table, came up with a comprehensive plan that's now been in place for, I think, 12 years and has been continuously updated since then. But that leverage the city had on that half mile, I think, was critical to making sure everybody got to the table. I see, if I understand this, and I just want to make sure that I'm understanding it, on page 6, the net effect of this is, if there is no comprehensive plan in place, the county cannot authorize subdivisions or building within the half mile, but if there is a comprehensive plan in place, then jurisdiction turns over to the city? Because if that's what it's, that's my question. What happens when there is no comprehensive plan? Does the, under this approach, does the county have the authority to authorize all kinds of subdivisions right at the city's doorstep? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scott, are you going to answer some of these questions? Thank you, Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, little background. Committee 7 has been wrestling with this set of problems for 20-plus years, to my knowledge, and there's been a fair amount of conflict. The ideal solution is where the city and the county are working together in a cooperative mode, and that's true across most of the state. And this bill is intended to incentivize that because you need to get the consent of both parties for some of these things. However, right now, the county could improve a subdivision in this area. They still can do it, as I understand, with this bill. The comprehensive plan would be the ideal, where the city and the county had come together and had an agreement that had some teeth in it. So if that's there, you don't need to have the backup procedure. If it's not there, then under the bill, what happens is for the city to regulate out in that half mile, the county has to approve the specific ordinance that regulates it. And what we have seen, Mr. Chairman, is in a few places where they're not getting along, and particularly some in this southeast corner of the state in the past, the cities have been extraordinarily abusive of the citizens that are in this area where, and what you go on, it's not taxation specifically included. So it's not taxation without representation. It's regulation without representation. And the residents have nobody they can vote for to turn to. And that's a real problem, and it has resulted, and it's damped down some in recent years, but it has resulted in some real hard feelings between people adjacent to the city and the city, and some real expensive and oppressive requirements on some of those residents. So this was designed to put some balance in it to stop that, and the cities really have two protections. One of them is the hope that they and the counties will be getting along, and in many of the cases around these larger cities, the circumstance is, you know, the county commissioners, they get elected by the people out in the county, but they also get elected by the people inside the city. And at least our experience is we tend to get a balance on the county commission of rural residents and city residents, often ones that have served on the city council. And under those circumstances, you know, all sides get represented, and the county commissioners have a big incentive to be reasonable, Mr. Chairman. So that's the bet. You get then the best of both worlds. But I think it is important that the residents have some protection there from elected officials that they get to vote for. They may be, Mr. Chairman, very much a minority of the voters for those commissioners, but because they can vote for a commissioner, they will be paid attention to. And we've seen some examples where the city is just, they could care less. And that's reaching back some into history. So I think this bill represents a good compromise. There was a number of legislative proposals to to let the county folks vote in the city elections. Those are impractical and improper. They were illustrative of the degree of difficulty that some of the residents in the immediate vicinity of the city were having with some of the cities. So this is an attempt to compromise it. I don't guarantee to you that it's going to work perfectly everywhere, but there's a tension, and I don't think anything is going to work perfectly everywhere. But there is an incentive, Mr. Chairman, with this for both the city and the county to get along and do rational development. And I think that's needed. So I would urge the adoption of the bill.
Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, I would yield.
Senator Rothes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I still have a few questions, and maybe I'm just not tracking exactly how this would play out. And, Mr. Chairman, I think nobody knows some of the concerns that led to these types of legislation better than I do. And I certainly appreciate that there are passionate interests on both sides of this. But I'm wondering if the pendulum is swinging back too far the other way, and perhaps it's just my lack of comprehension of how this works. But as I see it, if there's a comprehensive plan put in place pursuant to 185202B, which is going to be the county commissioner's zoning for this area within that one-half mile of the corporate limits, that as long as they have that in place, I am not seeing any real requirements that there be coordination between the zoning and planning of that area that is adjacent to the city and what's going on in the city itself at that place. So these can be entirely different, as I understand it, zoning, use, roadmaps, everything else, and there's no requirement for coordination. I might be missing that's somewhere else, Mr. Chairman, but I'd like a little bit of clarification. If these are two entirely independent zoning endeavors that can take place so long as there is a comprehensive plan, so the city has one zoning thought, the county has another, they're right up against each other, maybe the streets don't even align. Is that what we're going to, assuming that that's enacted in full? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. I'll try to help here. Mr. Chairman, I have no concern about the effective immediately. I think that came out of the subcommittee work this summer, which I think maybe you were part of, Mr. Chairman, but it could be a July 1 date. You could even change that further. You're welcome to play with that. In regard to infrastructure, indeed, this is the key point. It is very important to have infrastructure in these areas and have appropriate infrastructure development. But I think the committee, and it was divided, came down on the side that the folks who live in the county can only vote for county commissioners, and they want them to represent their interests, and they choose to live in the county. As far as the bill is structured, you see there's three sections. One is the half-mile jurisdiction, which if the county has adopted comprehensive planning and zoning, the city can't enter into that. And with regard to the good senator from Albany County, I have to look closely at the planning and zoning statutes to see whether they're required to coordinate with cities. I assume they are, but I didn't see it in a quick look, so we need to figure that out. But the second part it applies to is the urban renewal, and it says, hey, you can't even do this reach out for 5 miles for urban renewal unless the county supports it by resolution. And then the third one was the platting, and the platting has to do with 1 mile. And if the county has zoning in that area, then the county approves the plats, which sort of makes sense. If they have zoning, they should approve the plats. The first part of the bill on pages 2 and on to page 3, that's kind of the crux where it says you can do anything allowed by law, but the law in all those areas have been changed, especially if the county has adopted zoning. Unless all of the following apply, it's what it actually says. Let's start at the beginning. No governing body or executive head of a municipality is authorized to exercise jurisdiction
over an area beyond the corporate boundaries of a municipality unless all apply. It has to be permitted by law. They have to adopt an ordinance. And the county has to pass a resolution to support it. Now, if you want to amend this bill and have the discussion about that part, which is on page 3, top Romanette 3, you can talk about whether the county should have the ability or whether they should have to affirmatively adopt the ordinance, or you could switch it around and say that they don't protest. You know, you could play with that. We could have discussions on the rest of the readings about that. I think that'd probably be fair. But the bill is truly an attempt, as the good senator from Natrona County said, to realize that these people have property rights. They are citizens of the county. They vote for county commissioners. And I think in this whole thing, though, counties are going to have to step up a little bit. I agree with that. But they should. And this seems appropriate because these people vote for the county commissioners. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Kinski, then Senator Rothfuss, and Senator Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the discussion. And the division into the three sections is helpful to my understanding. Let's go to Section 3, the plat within 1 mile. My question is the net effect of the language that is on page 6 in the bottom half after the stricken language. It now reads, starting at the end of line 15, provided, however, that any plat of land which is adjacent to any incorporated city or town or within 1 mile of the boundaries of any city or town and which is not regulated by zoning consistent with the comprehensive plan adopted to pursuant to 185202 shall be jointly approved by both the Board of County Commissioners of the county and the governing body of the city or town before same shall be filed. That implies to me that it's a standoff, that unless the city assents, the county cannot be approving plats, that is, subdivisions, within that 1 mile zone. And is that your reading, and is that the intent, or am I reading it wrong? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Rothfuss.
Starting off with that last point, because I found that interesting also, I had a different read of it, which is that both would have to sign off if there is no comprehensive plan, but if there is a comprehensive plan, then I believe only the county would have to sign off on that plat, even if it's adjacent to the city. At least that's my reading, and I'm curious to know whether that's accurate. Mr. Chairman, though, going back to the concept that there's this inequity within that near zone to the city limits or the municipality, the other side of it is that there's a lot of incentive to live right up next to but not in a city. You don't have to pay the city taxes, but you typically have many of the city services, not directly, but the sort of indirect services. You have the availability of nearby roads that have probably been plowed. They might not plow right up to your street because they'll probably stop at the city limits. You have the availability, the convenience. There's a lot that goes with it. So the concern for the municipalities, which is also a reasonable concern, is that these folks that live in that area end up enjoying a lot of what the rest of the taxpayers are paying for, but they don't have to pay the taxes when they're right up next to the municipality. So it is two sides. There's no question we have problems about the not having representation when you've got some type of regulation. It's a real concern. But on the other hand, you are taking advantage of resources that you don't have to necessarily pay for within the city. It's sticky on both sides, Mr. Chairman, and I feel that the pendulum, as I mentioned before, is going a little bit too far towards the way of the county at this point and leaves the city in a difficult circumstance where they can't plan under many circumstances because they'll be coming into conflict with zoning that is contrary to the plans of the city. Maybe you're putting in a school at the city limits or towards the edge of the city, and you've got an area zoned appropriately for that. Maybe you've got a park there, but now there's going to be something going in that's industrial as seen by the zoning plan of the county. And to the best of my read, Mr. Chairman, there's no requirement to coordinate that. And we have no means of reconciling that. So it's true, as the good tall senator from Natrona County mentions, when they're getting along, this will go great. But I believe this legislation is supposed to be addressing the circumstances when they're not getting along, and I don't know that it gets any better. I think it just shifts who has the power without necessarily requiring anyone to come to the table and work together. So, Mr. Chairman, I don't know that this legislation remedies my concerns, but I'm still interested in hearing more. Maybe I'm missing that requirement and look forward to more discussion on that.
Mr. Majority, floor leader.
Also, one other question. When they rise that, I look at page 3, lines 11 through 14 in B. My understanding is that once the Board of County Commissioners, if they adopt an ordinance, this is up above, once they adopt an ordinance authorizing the exercise of this extraterritorial jurisdiction, but under B, that's revocable at the will of the majority of the county commissioners at any time. If I understand, I just want to see if that's a correct understanding.
Right. Senator Scott.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the language that was cited on page 6 and 7 that requires the city to approve plats within 1 mile, I think that does give them the veto power over subdivisions, and I would suggest that you could well in a second reading amendment strengthen that language, because then that would give a further incentive for the cities and counties to work together, which is what you really want here. And there's any number of ways. You could say that the comprehensive plan only overrides it if it's been approved by both the city and the county. That would be one way to deal with that. You could say that exception doesn't apply to the platting. There's a number of ways you could handle that, but you could strengthen that so that each side has to get along with the other to get anything sensible done. And that's what we want here. With regard to giving the county the power to back up on an ordinance, I think that's very important, Mr. Chairman, because without that power, you get the county approved it once, and then times change over the years. And the city's starting to insist on something that is abusive in the county residents. The commissioners still need to have the ability to say we're going to back up and protect those residents. And if they don't have that, they may be very reluctant to consent in the first place. So I think that it's a very real power, Mr. Chairman, and I think an important one.
Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, speaking to the language on page 6, starting in line, I believe, 16, one of the concerns I have, there's a real reason why when you have property within a mile of the city limits that you want to subdivide with the county and not the city. And as I read this, what you're saying, if you don't have a comprehensive plan, which means you have countywide zoning, which like in the county I'm from, we do not have, then really you're going to have the city telling you how to do any kind of a subdivision with 1 mile, which means the way I've had experience in that regard is that you'll have to put in curb and gutters, you'll have to put in streets, paved streets, and all of that. And a lot of areas are just not in a situation, especially in small rural areas, it's within 1 mile. It's just not cost beneficial to even consider doing that. So my question is, if this passes like this, would that be the case of what would happen?
Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, I think it might be a good idea if we all went to page 6 a little bit and remember this is about platting, and it just talks about, at the beginning it talks about what plats shall contain, and it says a plat in the rural areas have to be approved by the Board of County Commissioners unless the plat is an area adjacent to the city out to 1 mile. In that case, the plat has to be approved under existing law by both the county and the city. That is existing law. What this bill does is add language that says it has to be approved by the city and the county only in the case where the county doesn't have zoning. The county has zoning. The city doesn't have to participate in that approval. So
it's actually more flexible than it was before. It actually gives the county a little bit more power, but only in the case where they have adopted zoning. That's true. But right now, it's a joint approval. This says where there's zoning, it would be just the county. There was discussion about the half-mile zone, Mr. Chairman. Good discussion, and it is true that this the county allowing the city to regulate in that area is revocable. The county has to affirmatively say it's okay to regulate, and they can withdraw it at any time. That's the half-mile zone, or under any other grant of authority to cities for extraterritorial jurisdiction in the law. That's where the bill comes out. I want everybody to understand what it does, and then I'm sure that folks will explore different ways to tilt power back and forth. We ought to have fun over the next 2 days. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Question been called for? Any further discussion? The question is on Senator Case's motion that when the committee of the whole rise report, it do so with a do pass motion on Senate File 17. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 17 is passed. Committee of the whole. The next file for our consideration is Senate File 126. Would the reading clerk please read the file?
Senate File 126, Guides and Outfitters Penalties, an act relating to guides and outfitters, sponsored by Senator Coe, was referred to Committee Number 6, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Anselmi Dalton, Barnard, Boner, Emmerich, and Moniz. Senator Emmerich, Chairman.
Senator Emmerich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, it do so with favorable consideration of Senate File 126, Guides and Outfitters Penalties. There is a Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to File 126, and I would move that amendment.
Will a reading clerk...
After it read in. I'm sorry.
Will a reading clerk please read in the amendment?
Senate File 126, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 7.
Senator Emmerich, may you please move the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 126. And for an explanation of this good file and the amendment, I would call on the good senator from Cody.
Senator Coe.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Bring to you Senate File 126, Guides and Outfitters Penalties. And what this really does, members of the Senate, is it puts a little more teeth into the enforcement statutes that are out there with illegal outfitters. And believe me, there's a lot of this going on. If you're an outfitter and licensed as an outfitter, you have a lot of requirements to be able to do that. Including insurance, you know, your insurance gets looked at, you pay fees to the organization, you have a lot of fixed costs, but with the illegal outfitters, they have the ability to come in and they can be a resident as well, go out and charge somebody a significant amount of money, maybe not quite as much as a licensed outfitter, but a lot of money and not have to comply. So this is a problem in the outfitting industry. It's a problem in our hunting industry. And if you'll see, if you look at the bottom of page 1, paragraph A, you'll see that we put a little more teeth into the penalties. The $5,000 fine, imprisonment for not more than 1 year or both, that's the real addition to what we're doing here, to try to put some teeth into it. We had extensive testimony, or pretty good testimony, in committee. The Wyoming Game Wardens, endorse this bill. They like it because it's a problem, and there are some of the enforcement agencies that are out there trying to enforce legal outfitting. With that, Mr. Chairman, I would deal with the Standing Committee Amendment or answer questions on the bill before I do that.
Let's go ahead and move with the amendment, Senator Coe. It has been read in and moved.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, this is mostly a cleanup amendment. It goes into a different section, which is 23.2407A, license required for outfitters and professional guides. And so the way the original bill was written, it did not tie in with this. So it says any person violating Wyoming Statute 23-2407A or B is guilty of a misdemeanor punishable by a fine of not to exceed $5,000. That's what the amendment does. It just ties in with another section in the statute. I'd ask for your approval.
Any question on the amendment? No discussion, seeing none. The question is on Senator Emmerich's motion that the Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to 126 do pass. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
The Standing Committee Amendment has passed. We're back on the bill. Any further discussion? Senator Cope.
Mr. Chairman, I kind of misled the group here because the Standing Committee Amendment, there was an amendment in committee to raise that penalty of $5,000 to $7,500. I overlooked that. Vote that up or vote it down. It's $5,000 currently, and that was passed in 2011, I believe. It was up from $2,000 to $5,000 in 2011.
Senator Coe, nobody else caught it. This amendment has already passed, so if anybody wants to deal with that, bring a second reading amendment. We're back on the bill. Question on the bill. All those in favor of Senator Emmerich's motion that Senate File 126, when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that Senate File 126 do pass, say aye. Those opposed, no.
No.
Senate File 126 has passed Committee of the Whole. Division being called for. All those in favor, please stand.
Good bill.
I wouldn't expect you to bring a bad one, Hank.
I never bring a bad bill.
You never bring a bad one. Okay.
All those opposed, still please stand. Okay, well, it has passed Committee of the Whole. Senate File 126 has passed Committee of the Whole.
Mr. Chairman, point of order.
Yes. Yes, the vote was 16 to 12. 16 in favor, 12 against. Okay, the next file for consideration is actually a joint resolution. Will the reading clerk please read in the resolution?
Senate Joint Resolution 1, Right of Privacy and Right to Know, a joint resolution proposing to amend the Wyoming Constitution to provide for a right of individual privacy, which shall not be construed to deprive a person of any right provided by law to examine documents or to observe the deliberation of any agency or political subdivision of the state as specified, sponsored by the Corporations Committee. Was referred to Committee Number 7, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Case, Pappas, and Scott. No, Senators Agar and Nethercott. Senator Case, Chairman.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move for the adoption of... I move when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it do so with a do pass recommendation on Senate Joint Resolution Number 1, Right of Privacy and Right to Know. Mr. Chairman, this was a product of your Digital Privacy Task Force. They have brought forth this bill, I believe, 2 years in a row, Mr. Chairman. And, Mr. Chairman, it went through the Corporations Committee, went through interim, and, of course, passed the Corporations Committee on divided vote yesterday. Mr. Chairman, the first time we saw this bill, it was modeled after concepts in other states, but it only contained the first part. The right of individual privacy is essential to the well-being of a free society and shall not be infringed upon without the showing of a compelling state interest.
After that first attempt, we went back to the drawing board, and I was a member of the Digital Privacy Task Force. It was chaired, the Senate chairman was the good senator from Albany County. We sat down with people interested in public information and people with that represent the newspapers and media outlets in our state. We sat down and we actually adopted a compromise that everybody agreed on. It was one of those great situations where something comes together that has this right of privacy and then has by law that nothing in this section shall be construed to deprive a person of any right provided by law to examine documents or to observe the deliberations of any agency or political subdivision of the state, except in cases in which the demand of the individual privacy clearly exceeds the merit of public disclosure. So why do we need this, Mr. Chairman? It's set to go on our very fundamental rights that we have as citizens of the state of Wyoming. And, Mr. Chairman, that's in Section 1, the list of rights. This would be a new right. Perhaps this is a new right that we thought we always had. You know, you thought you had the right to privacy. But in this world, with the prevalence of information about folks and the way that information can be misused, released, collected, we felt that it was time to kind of assert some ground in this area, Mr. Chairman. The testimony committee a lot was whether this applied, it prevented a right that affected individuals with respect to other individuals. And the general conclusion is no. This is a deal that we're saying this is a right that citizens have with respect to their government. Some people will disagree with that characterization, but that's the way that the testimony has come out, both through the select committee work and the collaborations with the Corporations Committee. Mr. Chairman, there was also discussion, well, isn't this protected by the Fourth Amendment? There are some attorneys that think that the Fourth Amendment of the United States Constitution, which, of course, protection against unwarranted search and seizure, is adequate enough. And I disagree, and I've been discussing with other attorneys, with other opinions, and that clearly I think it's not enough. And I think the members of the Digital Privacy Task Force and the members of the corporation that voted for this think it's not enough. We've seen it before. This is an important piece of legislation, and it's going to take a two-thirds vote to pass the Senate. But if you're going to commit to thinking about this important piece of legislation and you're considering voting against it, let's learn about it first. And I say that it's only fair that this be given three readings. It's been here three times. And there are definitely people that spend a lot of time thinking about this and decide that this is needed. And I urge your adoption.
Senator Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Two questions. One is, what is the practical effect of this if it became an amendment to the state constitution? And the other is, I believe, wasn't it the right to privacy that was cited as the basis for Roe v. Wade?
Come on, pitch here.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'll respond to those questions. First of all, on and for this legislation, the right to privacy is, I think, a right that people value in Wyoming probably more than other states, but we're one of the few states without anything in our Constitution that directly relates to that right of privacy. We rely strictly on the penumbra of rights that we gain from the U.S. Constitution, and that tends to deal well with cases of search and seizure and when dealing with police officers, but it certainly doesn't do anything to limit a lot of the activities of the Wyoming state government and how they treat your information and any type of presumption of privacy. So when we get at the question of what the practical effect really is that there is that presumption of privacy for the citizens of Wyoming with respect to the actions of the state government, that your information will not be released, it will not be sold, that there'll be some obligation on the state of Wyoming not to be invading your privacy without some type of compelling interest. When we heard testimony, when we looked at what other states have done and can do, there are a lot of things that are interesting new technologies that are on the horizon that would allow a great deal of privacy intrusion and invasion, Mr. Chairman, without violating any laws. There's nothing that would preclude it, nothing against it. And it's difficult to get ahead of that new technology and to be predictive enough that we can really protect the privacy rights of individuals until after they've been violated. We have nothing in the Constitution right now that provides this overarching right of privacy from the Wyoming government, from cities, towns, and counties. And this would do that. One example we heard in committee was of a state to the west of us that had a contract through their law enforcement agencies to simply scan license plates that were driving down the road. They weren't necessarily looking for anything in particular, but it seemed like a good idea to build a collection of everyone that drove down a certain interstate that headed north to south along a coast, just to know who was going where when. That was a contract then that the interesting part was it wasn't just a contract where the government was the only entity that got the information. They were sold the information by the vendor, but the vendor, of course, kept that information, built profiles on those individuals, and it was all perfectly legal. That's fine. That would be fine in our state right now. No problem. Nothing against it. The government could, if they chose to, reach out, try and build those profiles, and of course they could sell that information. Again, Mr. Chairman, because there's no overarching right of privacy. It's difficult to say everything that a right like this that's going into Article 1 would do. It would have unanticipated consequences. It's supposed to. That's the point, Mr. Chairman, is to recognize that we value it as a state, to have a protection in place for it, the same way we value the other aspects that we see, Mr. Chairman, in Article 1, where we once again codify a freedom of speech, for example, and a right to bear arms, for example, in our state constitution, recognizing that it's not sufficient just to have it at the federal level. And, Mr. Chairman, the Roe v. Wade concept, going to the good question from my friend from Sheridan, it's built out of not one amendment, but this penumbra of rights concept from the Constitution that provides a privacy right. But it's not a detailed right. It's not an explicit right, and it tends to be interpretive. We have the Fourth Amendment, which does get to certain instances where there's a clear right to privacy and against search. But something along these lines, clarified and explicit in the Wyoming Constitution, could make it very clear to the state that the state values the individual right to privacy and will respect that moving forward as we move into this digital information age where it's very easy to violate that right.
Ah, Senator Wassenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to point out in our Constitution on page 1, section 4, we have a simple restatement of the Fourth Amendment and its security against search and seizure. So we do have something in our Constitution. But my question is for the sponsors exactly what a compelling state interest is, because in my interpretation, a compelling state interest is the highest standard of proof that you have to have for the state to defend itself from any action in a court of law. So I would ask for clarification on what exactly that means. And if that means what I think it does, in order for us to not release information or something, we would have to have a compelling state interest before we could say, no, you automatically get it. And the courts would have to hold that.
Any further discussion? No. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, in looking at the bill and thinking about it, two thoughts come to mind. Just one following up on my good friend from Campbell County is when you have a compelling state interest, usually what you're establishing, the reason it's a compelling state interest is because this is a declaration, this is a fundamental right. And so when you have a compelling state interest, it requires it go to the strict scrutiny standard, which we've talked somewhat about with in some other areas. And usually what that means is, particularly in these types of rights, and it's been a long time since I had constitutional law, Mr. Chairman, but my recollection is that that imposes upon the state the least restrictive method of infringing upon that right. It has to be, you have to have this compelling state interest is a very strict scrutiny, and you have to have, if you're going to invade that right, it requires, I believe, some along the lines of a least restrictive method. Now, and I put this in the context of this, because we just had this discussion here not too recently, but I think it applies as square on point there, cell phones and students and cell phones. We're granting under this right, a student with a cell phone would have a compelling state interest in the privacy of that cell phone. Under this test, I would think that it would require probably at a minimum a search warrant to enter at and look at that cell phone, because that's a compelling state interest or a compelling interest in that right, and the state would have to have a compelling state interest in doing that. Does bullying or potential bullying rise to that? Does there have to be probable cause? You get to that whole thing, and here we go. And so it doesn't apply just while I enjoy my privacy rights and this is a tough one. I do think we do have a certain we've already alluded to them, Roe v. Wade and the penumbra of private of rights that are out there and come from emanations and interpretation and things like that. Those are out there and so they have some of those protections already under the United States Constitution. But we'll have to think about this, but I think this takes us, we have to be careful about where this takes us, and are we willing to, I don't like Big Brother either, but I don't know that as we do this, I think it's got far-reaching ramifications. We need to be careful as we consider this.
Senator Wassenberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I read this new constitutional amendment, I'm thinking and I'm wondering, because of a compelling state interest, and then it says, of any agency or political subdivision of the state, if we were to have a caucus, we would have to have a compelling state interest to not allow people into that caucus from the general public, the way I understand that. So it's pretty dangerous.
Yeah, I'm not following that one, but let's go with Senator Roth. He's perplexing over there. So, and then we'll go with Senator Nethercott, and then we'll go with Senator Scott. So that's the order, guys.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't often want to say I concur with the chair, but in that instance, I concur with the chair. Mr. Chairman, the language there, nothing in this section shall be construed to deprive a person of any right provided by law to examine documents, etc. The implication there is that our Public Records Act and Public Meetings Act can be written in such a manner that they allow limitations on this right to privacy. And that's the intent and implication of that. Caucuses are certainly not an agency of government or anything along those lines. And in fact, the Public Records Act, we know, has limitations on how it would even apply to the legislature. So hopefully that addresses that concern at this time. With regard to a couple of the other, the idea that the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution or Section 4 of our Article 1, which again is the security against search and seizures, is an all-encompassing right to privacy, or that's always sufficient. I think may have been true years ago, prior to our current digital information age. We are seeing more and more easy access to private information without a search warrant, without any type of need to go into somebody's house or search their person or papers or effects. And it's difficult to get to the point where we actually have protections in some of these concepts of just recording information, recording faces walking places, recording cars that are passing by. Those are the types of things that we need some protection for that we don't have currently under the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution, either the U.S. Constitution or Section 4 of Article 1. Mr. Chairman, to consider further the compelling state interest discussion, It is strict scrutiny. That's intentional, and I appreciate my good friend from Natrona County describing how that standard would be applied, and I believe he described it accurately. Strict scrutiny means that if there is some way to not violate that, you have to take it. You have to find the least infringing path towards a solution as the state. It's up there with then free speech, freedom of religion, and some of the other fundamental rights. That is how this is written. That is a strict scrutiny standard, and that's the implication as stated. Two other states, Mr. Chairman, have done this. Most of the rest of the states, I believe it's 17 other states that have a right to privacy, do not have a strict scrutiny, but those two states do. And one of those states is to the north of us, and things have gone fine for them. They did not collapse because they had too much privacy, as it turns out, and they seem to move along quite well. But it's just that importance of privacy and the prioritization of privacy as a fundamental right that this would move forward, recognizing once again that we need to be able to have more clear and explicit respect for that privacy as we move into the digital age.
Okay, Senator Scott and Senator Nethercott.
And that is, does this proposed amendment apply to private invasions of the right to privacy? And, Mr. President, I think the biggest challenge we're going to have to our privacy going forward are private invasions. Between the megadata collection that's going on now that didn't used to be possible and now is in our digital age, where businesses for commercial reasons are finding out all about our shopping hazards, habits, and what we buy and what we like. And sooner or later, that's going to start spilling over into the public press, and where, as drone technology develops, and they can come take pictures of what's going on in your backyard, and with infrared technology, maybe even some of the things going on inside your house, will this amendment apply to that? And if it does, should we do it that way? Or are we better off with a rapidly evolving technology and evolving society in that way, dealing with such threats by statutes as we perceive them arising and causing trouble? Would the constitutional amendment simply turn that function over to the courts with, I think, somewhat unpredictable results? So that's, Mr. Chairman, I raise that issue. I think that's something we all ought to think about before we vote on this third reading. And I will say there are some people, Mr. Chairman, lawyers that I respect, that think this is strictly limited to the government. But I'm not at all sure that it is, given the way the courts can interpret things.
Senator Nethercott.
Mr. Chairman, I voted no for this amendment in committee, and I urge you to vote no now. It is filled with unforeseen consequences, a stew of codifying U.S. Supreme Court principles, Public Records Act principles, and results in a mess. My first review of it actually doesn't have to do with the compelling state interest that everyone else seems to be concerned with, but rather is the second portion of the amendment, which no doubt was as a result of a compromise reached regarding one of our constitutional amendments and a fundamental right. I urge you to consider that there should be no compromises when you're talking about a fundamental right. And that particular issue is, nothing in this section shall be construed to deprive a person of any right provided by law to examine documents or to observe the deliberation of any agency or political subdivision of the state, except in cases in which the demand of individual privacy clearly exceeds the merits of public disclosure. So we have previously debated the Public Records Act, and I encourage you to acknowledge, based on our review of that particular statutory section, that these two provisions and standards are drastically different. And therefore, if a public agency denies me the right of a record under the Public Records Act, it's possible I could still sue that government agency for a constitutional violation because I don't think it exceeds the merits of public disclosure, whatever constitutional standard that might be. So we've just opened up the floodgates of litigation for violation of the Constitution for agencies denying public records because there's a whole new standard created here. It's poorly planned with unintended consequences. I also reassert, as many of the other lawyers we've heard talk about, that the Fourth Amendment does provide these protections. There is a progeny of case law in the U.S. Supreme Court concerning this, and in our own courts here in the Wyoming Supreme Court, where they have acknowledged the Fourth Amendment provides a right to privacy. And that's important to recognize. To the senator from Natrona County, as we discussed in committee, Wyoming common law also provides for a right of action for an invasion of a personal right of privacy. So in the event an individual, not the government, invade your privacy in some way, you may be able to sue for that in a civil action in our courts in this state. There is a private right of action for invasion of the right to privacy. It's called a tort. That it's a real legal concept that exists and is sued on frequently in this state. So I assert to you that there is, at this time, this particular legislation is written, this constitutional amendment as written has unintended consequences that are significant and severe that are redundant when compared to the Fourth Amendment. I don't disagree that there are additional privacy concerns that we as a society are facing with the advent of technology, but this constitutional amendment doesn't prevent those from occurring. There's another concept that's very important to understand when you're talking about the right to privacy, and that is the first and fundamental tenet. Is it a reasonable expectation of privacy? Do you have a reasonable expectation of privacy? The example provided was the government was tracking license plates. When you drive on a public road, you do not have a reasonable expectation of privacy. The courts have already ruled on that, actually, under the Fourth Amendment case law. And they've said you have no right to privacy driving on a public roadway. When you leave your home or when you leave a private area, there's no reasonable expectation of privacy. So that particular example, this particular amendment, wouldn't apply to anyway. It wouldn't prevent the government from tracking who's driving on what highway and when. So I urge you to vote no on this bill. It has severe unintended consequences. Thank you.
Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, I'll do my best, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Let's talk about what the Fourth Amendment says. It's virtually the same in our state constitution as it is in the U.S. Constitution. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the person or things to be seized. There's a lot of case law and a lot of other law about the implications of the Fourth Amendment. Mr. Chairman, we've had discussions on this floor about the Fourth Amendment. If you can remember the open fields doctrine, I know we've had discussions about it. Basically says that law enforcement can come on your property, and as long as they actually don't enter your house, they're not violating your privacy. Now, would this amendment change that? No, I'm not really suggesting that. But what I'm saying is that the Fourth Amendment is very hollow protection after it has been eroded. We've had the discussions about the open fields doctrine. You know that it was written before there was a concept of vehicles and that you're not secure in your vehicles. They don't need a warrant to search your vehicle. They don't need a warrant to stop you. And I'm not saying that's implicated by this either. But what I'm telling you is the Fourth Amendment isn't good enough. I wish it was. I will have more discussion about private versus public implications of this. I think this just applies to government. But in the case that was cited about license plates, we've had a discussion on both sides of that. Of course, if we drive down a public street, that's a public act. Anybody can take your picture. Anybody can know where you're going. They can follow you. That's all true. But what shouldn't happen is that our government shouldn't collect that information
and use it against us. They shouldn't sell it to private vendors, absent a compelling state interest. That's why this should apply to government, even if it's this kind of data that another individual can collect. We're trying to put brakes on government here. More about the right to privacy. It's not really an explicit right under the Constitution. It's really one of those inalienable rights that has been eroded in so many ways. And it's as the ability to transfer information, the ability to track people. I mean, it is literally going to be possible, and it is possible in some sense now, that if you were to go to a major city in the United States and you were to walk down the street, you were going to be on a camera. And as you walk from place to place, the data is there where they can connect all of your whereabouts and follow you through the entire day, really no matter where you go. The data exists. With mega computers, with everything, it'll be available. Don't you think it's time we said, be careful how you use this information that you collect about people? Yes, this is a balance. This is a balance about compelling state interest, about privacy clearly exceeding the merits of private disclosure. The reason the whole last part was put in was so that a public official couldn't, in the name of privacy rights, hide from disclosure under the Public Records Act and, records of meetings, et cetera. It is definitely a balance. And it's a balance that we need to have a discussion about for a couple days. And it's a balance that the people of Wyoming need to have a discussion about as they decide whether or not to approve this change in our Constitution, our very precious Constitution. And the last time we changed it, and I don't mean to sound that this isn't important, but the last time we changed it was to provide the opportunity to hunt, fish, and trap. Don't you think people's privacy rights in the digital age deserves as much attention? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, any other further discussion? Seeing none, did I hear a question been called for? The question is on Senator Case's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise reported do so at the do pass motion on Senate Joint Resolution 1. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no.
No.
The ayes have it.
All right.
Division being called for. All those in favor, please stand. All those in favor, please stand higher. Okay. Now those in favor can sit down, and those that aren't in favor can leave the room. No. Go ahead. Please stand. Seven? We don't have a quorum. I'm sorry. 20. Oh, my goodness. Under Rule 6-5R, having failed a... Oh, hold it. We have a standing roll call vote is required. And would the chief clerk please call the roll?
Standing roll call vote?
Agar? No. Anderson?
No.
No. Anselmi Dalton?
Aye.
Aye. Baldwin?
No.
No. Barnard excused. Boner?
No.
No. Bouchard?
No.
No. Burns?
No.
No. Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen?
No.
No. Coe?
No.
No. Dockstetter?
No.
No. Driscoll?
No.
No. Ellis?
No.
Emmerich?
No.
No. Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
No.
No. Kinski?
No.
No. Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer?
Aye.
Aye. Moniz?
Aye.
Aye. Nethercott?
No.
No. Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
No.
No. Peterson?
No.
No. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Von Platern?
No.
No. Wasserberger?
No.
No. President Bebout?
No.
No. Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 9 ayes, 20 no, 1 excused.
Senate Joint Resolution 1 having failed a roll call vote pursuant to SR 6-5A is deemed indefinitely postponed. Mr. Majority Floor Leader. You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
Reading clerk, please read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. President, your Committee of the Whole, having had under considerations bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. Senate File 46, do pass. Senate File 97, do pass. Senate File 96, do pass. Senate File 120, failed to pass the Committee of the Whole and was indefinitely postponed. Senate File 17, do pass, amended. Senate File 126, do pass, amended. Senate Joint Resolution 1, failed to pass Committee of the Whole and was indefinitely postponed. Senator Meyer, Chairman.
Senator Meyer.
Move for the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
Heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The Committee of the Whole report is adopted. Senator Nethercott.
President Bebout, having voted on the prevailing side of Senate File 82, I move for immediate reconsideration of the third reading vote on Senate File 82.
That motion is in order. It's a roll call vote, non-debatable. Please call the roll. You're voting. If you vote aye, you vote to reconsider Senate File 113.
82.
Oh, 82, excuse me. Maybe we should try 113 as well. Forget that. Let me say that one more time. If you vote aye, you vote to reconsider Senate File 82.
Point of order, I don't believe anybody has named the bill.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Case. You need to hand me that.
Well, I can. I want me to do it? I can do it now.
Okay, let me start over. That motion is in order. The reconsideration vote will be on Senate File 82. It's non-debatable. If you vote aye, you vote to reconsider Senate File 82. Will the Chief Clerk please call the roll?
Point of order. I'm sorry, Mr. President. We have to say graduation requirements.
Oh.
Right.
So I'm going to be the reading clerk. Okay. Let's start over one more time. The motion is to reconsider Senate File 82, graduation requirement CPR. You vote aye, you vote to reconsider Senate File 82, graduation requirement CPR. Will the Chief Clerk please call the roll?
Agar. Aye. Anderson?
No.
No. Anselmi Dalton?
No.
No. Baldwin?
Aye.
Barnard excused. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Bouchard?
No.
No. Burns?
No.
No. Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen?
Aye.
Aye. Coe?
No.
Dockstetter?
No.
No. Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Ellis?
No.
No. Emmerich?
No.
No. Hastert?
No.
No. Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
No.
No. Meyer?
Aye.
Aye. Moniz?
Aye.
Aye. Nethercott?
Aye.
Aye. Pappas?
No.
No. Perkins?
Aye.
Aye. Peterson?
No.
Rothfuss?
No.
No. Scott?
No.
No. Von Platern?
No.
No. Wasserberger? Aye. President Bebout?
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote? Dockstetter? No to aye. Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 15 aye, 14 no, 1 excused.
By your vote, you failed to reconsider Senate File 82. Yeah, okay. Senator Scott.
Chairman, 15 aye, 14 no. That does carry a motion to reconsider.
I know. By your vote, the motion is to reconsider has passed. Senate File 82. Will the reading clerk please read the Senate file?
Senate File 82, Graduation Requirement CPR, sponsored by Senator Landon, an act relating to education.
Senate File 82, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the Senate file pass the Senate? Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Agar?
No.
Agar, no. Anderson?
No.
No. Anselmi Dalton?
Yes.
Anselmi Dalton?
Yes.
Aye. Baldwin?
No.
No. Barnard excused. Boner?
No.
No. Bouchard?
No.
No. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
No.
No. Christensen?
No.
No. Coe?
Aye.
Dockstader?
No.
No. Driscoll?
No.
No. Ellis?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
No.
No. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer?
No.
No. Moniz?
No.
No. Nethercott? No. Pappas?
Aye.
Perkins?
No.
No. Peterson? No. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
No.
No. Von Platern?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
No.
No. President Bebout?
No.
No.
Anderson, no to aye.
No. Bouchard, no to aye. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 13 aye, 16 no, 1 excused.
Senate File 82, having failed to receive the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected of the Senate, Senate File 82 has failed to pass the Senate. Do you have any standing committee reports or messages from the House?
From the House of Representatives, January 27, 2017, message number 179. Mr. President, the following bill failed to pass the House third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill number 120, Maximum Speed Limit Petition, ayes 30, noes 27, excused 3. Message number 175. Mr. President, the following bills passed the House on third reading by the votes indicated. House Bill number 98, LLC Dissolution Distributions, ayes 57, excused 3. Message number 176, House Bill number 111, County Collective Accounts, ayes 57, excused 3. Message number 178, House Bill number 117, Operation of Motor Boat While Intoxicated, ayes 47, noes 10, excused 3. House Bill number 153, message number 181, House Bill number 153, Parental Rights, ayes 50, noes 7, excused 3. Message number 182, House Bill number 161, Divorce Residency, ayes 53, noes 4, excused 3. Message number 174, Mr. President, the following bills passed the House on third reading in an amended form by the votes indicated. House Bill number 84, Workers' Compensation Delinquent Employers, ayes 54, noes 3, excused 3. House Bill number 114, Service and Assistance Animals, message number 177, ayes 48, noes 9, excused 3. Message number 180, House Bill number 152, Search and Rescue Operations, ayes 57, excused 3. Message number 183, House Bill number 171, Unemployment Insurance Delinquency Contributions, ayes 57, excused 3. Message number 184, House Bill number 24, Water Commission Duties, ayes 57, noes 1, excused 2. Message number 185, House Bill number 40, Education Accountability, ayes 57, excused 3. Message number 186, House Bill number 91, Alimony Termination, ayes 49, noes 9, excused 2. Signed, Wendy Harding, House Chief Clerk.
Standing Committee Reports.
January 27, 2017, Mr. President, your committee number 4, to whom was referred Senate File 134, School Finance Class Size Waivers, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Coe, Ellis, Pappas, Rothfuss, and Wasserberger, Senator Coe, Chairman. Mr. President, your committee number 10, to whom was referred Senate File 89, Presumptive Disability for Firefighters, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with the recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Baldwin, Boner, Bouchard, Peterson, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
Senator Landon.
Voted on the prevailing side, Senate File 113, I would ask for reconsideration of that vote.
That motion is in order. Do we have the bill? Senator Landon, we do not have that bill in our possession. It has left the body already and gone to the other side.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Office.
This is the House of Origin. It's in our presence. It has to be in our... It's passed. My apologies, Mr. President. I thought it had failed.
Are you okay, Senator Office?
Absolutely. I was reversed on it. Thank you, Mr. President.
I didn't even have to tell you that you reversed. You realized that, Senator Office. Okay. Anything else before I ask? I say to the Majority Floor Leader that clears the desk. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Mr. President, thank you. Mr. President,
yeah.
Privilege of the floor for just a moment for
you
our
may.
Motion. Thank you. Just to let you folks know, by our count, we have 86 files that are that remain to have some kind of action on them. Looking back, what's in the committees? If keep in mind that bills will have to be reported out of committee by next Thursday. And so if your committee, if you've got bills stacking up there and you need some help, there's some other committees that everybody's got some, but some aren't quite as busy as others. If you don't think there's important bills and you want to get those re-referred, please be thinking about that so we get that done early next week. But with that, Mr. President, we're in good shape, and 46 bills is certainly doable next week without having a long Friday next week. So with that, Mr. President, I move that we stand adjourned until 10 a.m. Monday, January 30th, 2017.
Announcement, Senator Coe.
Mr. President, your committee number 4, Education, meet Monday morning. Listen up to this, if you would. We aren't in L-54, we're in L-51 at 8 o'clock. Take up continuing work on Senate File 114, Education Reform, Senate Joint Resolution 8, School Construction and Renovation Constitutional Amendment, and Senate File 145, UW and Community College Boards of Trustees. Chairman.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet Monday morning at 8 a.m. Standard Committee Room, Senate File 142, Community Mental Health Payment Reform 2, Senate File 150, Long-Acting Reversible Contraception.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 9, Minerals and Economic Development, will meet about 15 or 20 minutes after noon recess to continue our conversation on Senate File 127, 127 Exterior Residential Storm Damage Repair Contracts, and then to take up what was scheduled today, which was Senate File 117, Nationwide Multi-State Licensing System Collection Agencies.
Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Judiciary Committee number 1 will meet Monday, January 30th, 8 a.m., Jonah Room, S-18, to consider the following bills: Senate File 154, Sex Offender Registration Accessories; Senate File 61, County Attorney Salaries; Senate File 158, Depositions by Telephone.
Van Hammer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your travel committee number 6 will meet Tuesday morning at 8 a.m. General Room S-27. Senate File 139, Game and Fish Licenses. Senate File 169, Migratory Bird Refuge. Thank you.
Any other announcements? Senator Dockstader.
Quick note, the Legislative Task Force on Facilities will be reviewing facility layouts in... I don't have a room number, but we're going to be meeting up on 54 on conclusion here, on adjournment.
Any other announcements? Senators, I want to compliment you on a good work week. We've got a lot done. I want to wish you safe travels, and every once in a while your president will throw zingers at you. You paid attention this afternoon and caught it. I appreciate that. Keep me in line with that. We adjourn until 10 a.m. Monday, January 30th.